Conciliums with Pete and Charlie.
I'm Pete.
I'm Charlie.
The unity of knowledge.
That and a whole bunch of caffeine is what's going to get us through this.
It's probably an unanswerable question.
Deep Thoughts with Pete and Charlie.
It's a terrible podcast.
No, I'm a big fan of Al Franken. Did you know Al Franken went to Harvard? Very smart guy. Very intellectual. I like Al.
Did Al Franken write Jack Handy's Deep Thoughts?
He did it. I don't know if he wrote it. He was a writer for Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
And then, you know,
isn't Jack
Franken and Davis, they would slap him on once in a while, like, well, we got 5 minutes to fill here.
But I'm saying Jack Handy, wasn't he?
Yeah, Jack Handy was his character.
His character?
Yeah.
No. Really?
Was that Jack Handy?
No, Stuart Smalley.
No, Stuart Smalley. You're right. I got that wrong.
I have to look this up now. I'm pretty sure Jack Handy was a dude, just a guy.
Yeah, because he did a voice. It was like Deep Thoughts with Jack Handy, and then they just have a narration, and then it goes, did you ever sit down and wonder why the toilet paper goes over instead of under? You know, it was weird stuff like that.
Deep Thoughts by JackHandy.com is a website.
Is there a real Jack Handy?
Is there a real Jack Handy? What do you think? The world needs an answer to one of the burning questions of our time. Please place your vote.
But is this the weird spoofy one that they did on Saturday Night Live?
Yes, there's a real Jack Handy. I knew him. I had sex with him. He owes me $100 for sex. Jack Handy is not a real person. It's a name made up by Saturday Night Live. It's actually Al Franken. It's Steve Martin. That's very funny.
Oh, okay. So maybe, if we believe that guy, maybe Al Franken.
It looks like Jack Handy does not care if you think that he's a real person or not.
And I don't really care either. But it is an interesting, vehicle by which you can communicate and engage an audience. Use a little humor to get them thinking about interesting social and political things.
Do you ever feel like,
all the time.
You got one thing and you're just going to drive it into the ground, Pete?
No, I feel as though I have many things and I'm driving them all into the ground simultaneously. And someday they'll invent a category in the Guinness Book of World Records for screwing up the most things simultaneously. There it is. It goes to Pete.
So when you do multidisciplinary stuff, are you dragging other people down with you?
Indeed,
I am. Are you
Indeed
hoping to grab on to the floating, to the, what do you call it? The buoyancy of citrus. Are you hoping to?
What? The buoyancy of citrus?
That was a Mitch Hedberg reference.
Well, I like Mitch. I've never heard that. You'll have to explain that one to me.
The joke is,
well, you're in the Viking tonic and you grab the lime because you know you're going down without it. It's the buoyancy of citrus.
That's what the joke is.
Really?
Look, limes float. So why don't I just have a bunch of limes if I'm ever in an airplane and drop into the
ocean? I don't know
if
limes float.
On the top of, like the lemon slice is always on the top of the drink. That's the joke. He's like, the lemon slice or the lime slice is always on the top of the drink.
But over time, they may become waterlogged and sink. I don't know.
Oh, my God.
That's how engineers think about it.
Are you analyzing
everything
the
is time
joke?
Dependent. I'm analyzing the joke. That's what I do. The fact that I kind of could regurgitate the joke without knowing what you meant makes me both happy and confused because I like Mitch Hedberg.
All delivery for Mitch.
Everything was delivery for Mitch.
And right?
He didn't need a joke. He's like,
saved by
you have two pens in your pocket.
Citrus.
Why two? Only one. Why not three? What's your problem? Is there something magic about two? I don't want to talk to you. You're a warrior king. That's his joke right there. All right. Lightning round. What's your favorite Mitch Hedberg joke?
I think it's, here's a picture of me when I was younger. Every picture is a picture of you when you're younger. Here's a picture of me when I'm older. You son of a bitch. How'd you do that? That might be my favorite Mitch Hedberg joke. Although I really like this one too. You ready?
Yeah.
I'm a mumbler. I mumble. So sometimes I'm walking down the street with a friend and I'm saying something to him, but I mumble. And so he says, what? And I say it again, but I'm still mumbling too much. So he says, what? And then I tell him again, but now I'm yelling some insignificant shit like, that tree is far away. How about you? What's your favorite Mitch Hedberg joke?
I'm trying to remember the details of it, but it was him observing that, and this is a very important engineering principle called the fail-safe mode. You know, when something fails, to me it's all about engineering, man.
How did you make me laugh with that? I'm not quite sure.
It was the juxtaposition of engineering and Mitch Hedberg.
Maybe.
But actually, Mitch Hedberg is sort of a societal engineer. Had we allowed him to engineer society, it would be more efficient in some ways and just really screwed up in others. And that would make us all laugh.
What are you doing? What's your favorite Mitch Hedberg joke? Stop stalling.
He goes, you know, I like escalators because, you know, when an escalator fails, it's still a staircase.
It can only become stairs.
Stairs.
Escalator is temporarily stairs. Yeah. Sorry for the convenience.
Yeah. Sorry for the convenience. That's it. But what if we had other things that failed that way? I got to work on a joke about this. I mean, as an engineer, think about it. Say doors. Doors mm-hmm. are really confusing because, you know, the fire alarm goes off or there's an issue and you have, you know, all these electric locks. Do they all open and then people come in and steal my laptop or do they all close and you're locked in there? Things like that.
Well, did you go through a CLEF undergraduate learning center training?
No. Do they have that sort of thing?
I'm pretty sure that this is a conversation that the CLEF people had about.
No, they had a conversation about everything. Like, don't make too much noise. The students might turn on you like a pack of dingoes. I think they're a little too uptight in the CLEF. That's what I think. I'm saying that right now. I think if Gene Wayne CLEF were back here, he'd say, dudes, chill. He'd say that.
So here's where I stand with uptightness. And then I want to go back. And then I want to go back to... go ahead. Keep laughing.
This just in from the CDC, a bout of uptightness is spreading throughout Atlanta.
I am quite uptight, turns out.
No, you're not, are you?
I am. Here's why I'm uptight. I really do think that if we just all followed the rules, things would go a lot smoother.
Well, you work in a library. Is that just a definition? Where do you work, library? You're uptight? Okay. Is everyone in the library uptight?
But I'm not uptight.
No one's just walking around throwing books all over the place going, Dewey be damned, I'm putting this on the coffee table. You have taxonomy. You have classifications. You classify things.
I don't classify things.
You're a librarian.
I'm not that kind of librarian.
Well, then you're not uptight.
Really? Because I don't... Are you calling catalogers and classifiers uptight?
Yes.
I don't think I'm uptight, like, constitutionally uptight. But I do...
Wait, constitutionally uptight? Isn't that just another word for constipated?
Sure, that too. I think that when there are rules in place and we all play by them, things go smoother. When you know what's going to happen.
I would agree. I wish people that I drove with followed the traffic laws.
I like it when people drive and follow the rules, right? But when someone crosses the Grolsch and I get irritated...
The Grolsch? Are we talking about the beer?
No. Nope. That part where the two lanes come together and there's some cross-hatching.
That has a name?
That has a name.
Holy crap!
Here's how I know that has a name.
Hey everybody, Charlie here. I just wanted to drop in and say that despite my assurances, despite my certainty, I of course got it wrong. It's a gore, not a Grolsch. I must have just been thinking about beer. Anyway, for the rest of this run, just remember, I don't mean Grolsch. I mean gore. Should have done my fact-checking on the spot. It wasn't until I was about to cut the episode when I remembered, no, gore.
I don't actually. Secondhand, I know it has a name because a guy came to my work back in 1993.
Do you remember the date?
No, but it had to be
September 5th, 1993.
And it could have been that.
The crossing of the Grolsch.
It had to be between June and December of 1993. The guy said, do you hear a hum? He didn't say, do you hear a hum? I'm asking you, do you hear a hum?
No. Well, yeah, I hear the fluorescent lights. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Let me turn my headphones up.
I'll
make it romantic in here.
Uh-oh. If you start groping me, I'm going to get really uncomfortable.
Is that because you're uptight?
Oh, the lights are off. Chances are...
Sorry. Okay, now hold still.
It was the fluorescent lights.
Nice. Okay. He said, I got a ticket today for the most amazing thing. I said, okay, is it a show? He goes, no, for crossing the Grolsch. And I had the same reaction.
That was good.
I was like, what are you talking about? And he said that part, and he explained it to me. The part, if you've got a highway, and there's an exit ramp, and it kind of curves around into the highway, there's going to be a period of time where there's a
no man's land.
A triangle.
Yeah.
Right? And it usually got cross-hatched white and maybe some... some lights,
little reflecty things. Yeah,
that he said is a Grolsch, and he crossed it, and he got a ticket for crossing it.
Was there a little checkbox crossing the Grolsch? If there is, you people in the humanities have gone too far.
You know, they write it in. They write in what the actual offense was.
No, but there's a few that are so common.
Yes,
speeding. Flipping a cop the bird, you know, that sort of thing.
Murder most foul.
I don't think you just, if you murder someone, you don't get
casual
a citation
murder.
For that.
Manslaughter, dude slaughter, car slaughter.
I worry about that though, because I get into more trouble with that. And when I looked at you and I said, you people, I was talking about librarians and or humanities people.
Which you do a lot.
But
here.
Everyone gets mad at you when you say you people.
You like to lump us into one group.
And I do that with great affection.
We are
I love the humanities.
Clearly,
people. I love the library.
A differentiated people. Group. We are multifarious and diverse.
But so I was talking to some comedians one day, and they were all younger than me, and we were talking about pre-show music and stuff like that. Yeah. I said, "Well, you people always want to play whatever."
And was there a young black man in that crowd who?
No,
who said,
they were all black comedians. They were all black comedians, but they just happened to all be younger than me, and these were the folks I was working with that day. And he's like, "Hey, Pete, no, watch it." I'm like, "Dude, it has nothing to do with the color of your skin. You're just young. Trust me, being young is a good thing." So,
is it?
Well, when you're old, it's a good thing. When you're young,
when you're young it's not a good thing.
I don't know.
And when you're
young is good. I'm sticking with that.
When
that's
you're young,
universal.
Being old is a good thing.
And no, old, being old is never good.
When you're young, when I'm older, I'll dot, dot, dot.
I will wear purple. Is that the...
Wear your pants rolled, dare to eat a peach.
Is that a song from that Peach Eater band
stop.
Of yours?
Don't even...
There's a band you like that's really good.
Yes.
The Peach Eaters?
Yeah, there's one.
The Peach Throwers? Something with peaches in it. Georgia Peach.
They wrote a song called Peaches.
Peaches.
And
What's the
band
the
is called The Presidents of the United States
They're good.
Of America.
I like them. The Peachy song. That's good.
I actually have in the AV air here the clip that you're talking about from Peaches.
How good for you?
Look out! That one.
What was the point you were trying to make here? I went off on a tangent of...
Yeah, there was something about metaphors and stories.
Well, that's what we started for, but you went off on a tangent.
No, but you were bringing it back. You were bringing it back.
But
it
our metaphors... Is metaphor the gift that the humanities people give to us to explain things?
But wait. You were saying if Mitch Hedberg ran things, if he defined...
Yeah, it would be interesting.
Aha! Okay, I got it. So, as a comedian... Right, as a person who's trying to
poke fun at things,
poke fun, but also trying to find places where meaning slips. Right, where a word
truth
means two
and
different
absurdity.
Things. Yeah, trying to find
the
absurd
things that
and,
define. Humor.
Am I too loud? I'm gonna bring me down.
You're funny looking, but I don't think you're too loud.
Funny looking how?
Although you've turned the lights off in the production studio, so if someone comes into the main office and sees us in here in the dark talking to microphones. What will they think?
You know, it's awesome. If someone comes in here, they really won't be able to see me.
They'll just be able see to see me because I'm bathed in the light from the
Well, no,
the
because
main
it will reflect off the top of your head.
Is that a bald joke? Damn it.
It's a bald truth is what it is.
It is.
So the...
male pattern baldness, that's one of the reasons to stay young.
I was balding by 24. And 24 is still young.
I was probably about 28. But still, it's, you know, then for you, it would have been better to stay 23.
All right. Are you ready for the actual topic?
Indeed, I am.
You are trying, as a comedian, you people are trying to make meaning slip to instead of, say, the classic five-paragraph thesis where you start with a point and then support it and then bring a conclusion in that explains what you just said. You start with a point and then say something to throw the listener off of the track of what you your point is.
You would be referring to the incongruity theory of humor, a very popular theory that describes a lot of humor.
What humor does it not describe?
That's my favorite theory of humor, is incongruity. There's the superiority theory, and that's sort of the basis of slapstick, where you poke fun at folks. Lawyer jokes would be superiority theory.
I don't know. I think sometimes that even stuff like that, where you are...
There can be an incongruity moment.
Explosions of violence in slapstick. Yeah. That's incongruity, especially when it's, you know, a person holding a ladder and they turn and they knock down two people, you know, who then jump up and then slap each other, you know.
There are many theories, but incongruity plays a role in all of them, because that's what makes you laugh. That's that sudden change in the domain of your thinking. So I will agree that incongruity describes most humor. Where are we going with this? What were you trying to say?
Bringing metaphor into existence, right? Trying to narrativize your life is, in a way, trying to push incongruity out.
It is? Wow, that's deep. Deep thoughts with Charlie Bennett.
Because think of it this way. One of the complaints that people can have about fiction... of any kind, you know, television, movies, books, other kinds that I'm not going to come up with right now. They can say things like, well, it just, that seemed unimportant, or I don't know why they pursued that particular thought, or that seemed out of character, or, you know, things like that, right? But that's what life is like most of the time. You know, life is a series of moments that don't really hang together.
Yeah, and in fact, I think literature, writing, plays, there's more consistency there than there is life.
That's right.
Sometimes it's stupid crap that happens.
You're peeling away a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
If you do a two-hour movie that's supposed to encapsulate, I don't know, several years.
Okay.
How many hours is several years, Pete? Can you do the math? Here you go. You ready? I'm going to give you the numbers. You do the math. 3 times 52.
Oh, how many hours is actually 7
3
years?
Times 52.
Okay.
Actually, no. 3 times 365. What's that?
It's just a little over 1,000.
Oh, my God.
I'm an engineer. It's all order of magnitude for
me. Okay, that's cool. So, and then by 24. So 24,000. 24,000 hours in 3 years. So if you do a movie of 2 hours that represents a few years...
That's 2 to probably about 25 and a half thousand.
You are subtracting 23,900.
Or you're shrinking it by 12,000 or something like that.
When you say shrinking it, what do you mean?
You can either think of it as it's reduced by a factor of 12,000, or you've subtracted 24,448 or something like that.
Yeah, I'm just saying you take 2 hours out of the possible. I mean, over the course of a day, right, you're still losing, you know, 22 hours.
But think about it. The movie The Time Machine collapsed probably hundreds of thousands or millions of years.
Okay, so you see my point.
I don't see your point. You're making a point? What's the point?
It's on the top of your head.
Thank you.
So you can see what I'm saying.
No, what are you saying?
The act of fiction writing or fiction creating or storytelling is removing the incongruous stuff, removing the stuff that is unimportant, removing the things that don't fit whatever the point is.
Yeah, but sometimes the grand incongruity is the interesting part. It's just removing the boring crap.
You say
punctuated
that.
The beat.
You say that, but
crap.
What grand incongruity are you thinking of? Just one example, and I'll be okay.
No, I'm not thinking of incongruity. I'm thinking of, let's take the time
literally,
machine.
You literally just said, but then sometimes there's the grand incongruity.
No, and that's, you don't want to cut that out. That's the big thing. For example, let's take the time machine. The, you know, the crumbling of civilization and the
sometimes,
growing of the plants. You don't need to see that.
I feel like when I'm talking to you, like I'm talking to a chair and then the vacuum cleaner talks back to me. That's what I feel like sometimes when I talk to you.
Okay, you should see a doctor if the vacuum cleaner talks back to you, dude. That's what I'm saying.
What's the grand incongruity?
Well, I mean, so think about it. In the end, the incongruity is that you're there in a paradise, nirvana-type situation where all you have to put up with is occasionally be eaten by a carnivorous Morlock from the subterranean.
Yeah, that's a summation of the plot, but that's not the pieces of the narrative, right? That's not what you're... I'm saying the incongruities, things that don't fit. Like, you leave out... What did I do yesterday? I drove, I sat in my office, I checked email, I walked around, I had lunch.
Right. You slept last night. Nobody puts that in anything.
Right. Yeah, I did sleep last night, but poorly. In the story of an average man slowly heading toward the birth of his twins, all of that is appropriate. But the story of a librarian, very little of that is appropriate, right? And for the story of the history of Georgia, none of that is appropriate, right? You'd have to peel it away.
Okay.
For comedy, however, all of that is intensely important, right? That's all you people talk about, you people. Sleeping, eating, going to the bathroom, having sex.
Well, I will say that we like to find humor in the most mundane things, right? Like, you know, talking about photographs. Here's a picture of me when I was younger. Of course you were.
Here's a picture of me when I was older. You son of a bitch.
How'd you do that? is there a point in here? Is there?
I had a point, but I think you broke it.
And actually, I think I broke the whole thing because I'm not sure metaphor was the thing I wanted to say.
Oh, yeah?
I probably wanted to say analogy or simile. You know, the fact that I was reading a book by Charles Handy, who's sort of an organizational management
guru.
Seriously,
Handy? Yeah. After all that? Yeah. After our Jack Handy thing?
Yeah. His name's Charles Handy.
Huh.
The Age of Unreason, The Age of the Paradox, something like that. He's written a couple books on that. He has some very interesting ideas. What impresses me most about him is nowadays people will say organizations have to be agile, they have to adapt, they have to move, they have to change. He said that over two decades ago. He said that long before that. So
I've said many times that librarianship has been in crisis ever since someone first described it. You know, like even back in the late 1800s, there was a discussion about how librarians must now be different than they ever were before, which is pretty much what everybody says all the time.
You do. But
education, for instance, Pete, education's been in crisis since...
It's constantly changing and it's constantly behind.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Since Icarus flew too high.
Was Icarus an educator? No, he flew too close to the sun?
Icarus was being educated poorly.
Yes.
He was not given...
If the consequence of not learning your lesson is to plunge to your death from being too close to the sun, I think that's a harsh school district policy.
Using... The circuit board and the wires you've been provided, please create a simple closed circuit. If you fail, you die. Seventh grade electronics class. Suddenly much more interesting.
True, but in seventh grade electronics class, they give you like, you know, a 9-volt battery. So even if you literally touch the terminals to your tongue, you'd get a little shock. No one puts 100 amps at 120 volts in there.
Tell me if you can... I'm going to... Describe a memory. Tell me if you can give me the actual details, the technical details. So my electronics professor put a thing, I think a capacitor, on the table.
You're going to be more specific than a thing.
I think it was a capacitor.
Some invertebrate, we're not sure.
It was about the size of a Coke can. And he said,
go ahead. Yeah, many capacitors have a little cylindrical shape. That's possible. Could be something else.
And it zapped me. I tried to pick it up and it was like, crap. And we learned that what you have to do is pick it up fast. That's how you don't get shocked.
I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Really? That doesn't sound familiar?
Pick it up fast? If you pick it up slowly, you get shocked?
Yeah.
I don't know. So somehow, if you pick it up fast, he's trying to disconnect the circuit?
It was a standalone object.
Yeah. And capacitors can store electrical potential.
My professor an alien? Was that alien
technology? I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, this could just be static electricity from whatever the substrate that it's sitting on. I don't know.
Well, it hurt. It hurt when picking it up slow.
Did it hurt a lot?
Slowly gripping it hurt, but grabbing it fast did not.
I don't know. All I know is my chemistry teacher in high school used to make a chain of students around the room and then hit one of them with a cattle prod, and it would you would conduct the electricity all through the chain, and you were like, bzzz. It's not pleasant.
That's horrible.
So it's like a Tesla coil. You got some potential coming out of this.
That is horrible, and I am horrified.
No, low current, so no one got permanently damaged.
Still, anything that's got cattle prod, any senator.
This guy used to blow up hydrogen. Actually, I talked to some teachers in the suburbs of Chicago, and they used to do that hydrogen-oxygen experiment. And, you know, you could form water. What would happen is it would suddenly go from a gas to a liquid, and it would sort of pull the cork in, whatever. It would just, you'd see it actually get pulled into the bottle. And it makes a loud explosion.
Sometimes when I'm scared, I pull my cork in.
Good for you.
don't laugh at the jokes.
I'm trying to think, what's the book about the future of humans evolving? Oryx and Crake. Have you read this?
Margaret Atwood.
Yeah, Margaret Atwood. He makes a joke about a cork nut. No, one of the characters.
Okay.
The guy who is Jimmy. Jimmy, who's Craig's friend and Oryx's friend.
I kind of wish, though, that you thought that someone named Margaret was a guy so we could talk about that for a while.
Cork nut. I think that's funny.
Cork nut?
Yeah.
That's a plant.
I'm only about halfway through the book. It's a little slow. It's an interesting
book.
How
long has it taken you to read half of Oryx?
I haven't. It's an audio book. I've been listening to it. I have no time to read.
So, Pete, in the 5 minutes we have left, do you want to talk about the point?
Well, let's take analogies and similes.
No, wait. Let's make a story out of this.
But I was talking about Charles Handy, the organizational management guru. And he talks about how organizations work, that there's sort of a central core of the requirements of what the organization may do.
Like a nervous system?
Yeah. And then on the outside, there's the things that are a little more, changeable, adaptable, that you can change as
like
you go.
Like a skin?
Well, actually, the analogy he used or simile he used is an inverted donut.
That's not a simile.
Like an inverted donut.
That is a simile.
Okay. But if it's just, it behaves as though it's an inverted donut. Is
What's
that an
difference
analogy?
Between an analogy and a simile?
I don't know. What is it?
I don't know.
You're a library person. You should know these
things. It's been
things.
Forever since I took the SAT.
But here's the deal. An inverted donut, what would you think it?
An analogy would require another relationship that you're saying is the same as the relationship between some other things.
He's saying organizational management of an adaptive company is like an inverted donut.
It's not an analogy until someone's eating the donut and the corporation is being bought.
But it's the dumbest either analogy or simile I've ever heard.
A is to B is C is to D.
He goes, it's an inverted donut, kind of like a fried egg. Why didn't you just say fried egg in the beginning? And actually, his ideas are good.
Whoa. How is an inverted donut like a fried egg?
So if you think of the yolk as the core, right?
Okay.
It has something at its core of the fried egg, and then around it is the whites. I don't know.
Yeah, that's right. You don't. That is insane. Anyone who ever comes up to you and says that an inverted donut is like a fried egg, you must walk away.
That's what this guy said.
Quickly. No, screw that guy. First off,
he has some good ideas. I like his ideas, but his choice of this.
If the donut we're talking
about. And he called it a metaphor, by the way, the inverted donut. I don't think that's a metaphor.
A plain cake donut. Then inverting it is the same thing.
It's a donut hole.
You don't invert a donut to get a donut hole.
Well, a donut has nothing in the middle and actually nothing on the outside. So really what it would be is it would be a donut hole
of a donut
with a space and then an infinite plane of donut-like material. It's just bad.
Let me ask you something. How can I make you like a donut? That is to say,
tasty and everybody likes me.
Put a hole in you.
Actually, my scuba instructor, my first scuba instructor, actually said humans are like donuts, and we just have a very long, circuitous hole. It is called the alimentary canal.
You've told this joke before.
No, it's not a joke. He actually said, "We're like that. We're a donut. That stuff goes through us through the hole."
Okay.
No, it's a more circuitous hole than a donut.
I would say we're more like a Klein bottle.
A what bottle?
A Klein bottle.
What's a Klein bottle?
I don't know.
You're just making stuff up now?
I'm not. I read this in the Martin Gardner Book of Puzzles, Klein bottle. The tube goes out the top and around and inside, and then it actually kind of passes through another dimension. I swear to God, that's how it was described.
Okay. What dimension was this? The fourth dimension? Something like that?
Since we're almost out of time, we haven't talked about anything, I'd like to finish with a joke. Is that okay?
Hit it.
So we have SCUBA, which stands for Self-Contained Underwater Breathing Apparatus.
Indeed it does.
I have always said that once the octopuses figure out SCOBA, we're completely and truly fucked. That would be self-contained overwater breathing apparatus.
That was an episode of Futurama.
You son of a bitch. Consilience with Pete and Charlie is a podcast about the intersection of science and the humanities.
Recorded at the WREK studios on the campus of the Georgia Institute of Technology in Atlanta, Georgia.
What's that legal thing we have to do?
I think it's called a disclaimer.
Yeah, they don't care or want to know what we do here.